Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett made headlines with their announced intentions to give away the majority of their wealth during their lifetimes. This trend toward giving while living has increased in recent years, driven by the Silicon Valley boom, as entrepreneurs seek to make their millions work for them in the short term. In the new book, Putting Wealth to Work, Joel Fleischman, one of America's leading experts on philanthropic giving, warns that short-term giving may not be the optimal solution to our nation's or our world's most serious problems. Joel Fleischman is a professor of law and public policy, director of the Samuel and Ronnie Hayman Center for Ethics, Public Policy, and the Professions, and director of the Center for Strategic Philanthropy and Civic Society at Duke University. The name of the book is Putting Wealth to Work, Philanthropy for Today or Investing for Tomorrow. And we welcome Joel Fleischman to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Donahue. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
As a professor of law and public policy at Duke University and an author of this book, what brought you to this subject?
Well, I've been teaching about philanthropy now for about 45 years. I've raised money for Duke. I headed its campaign at one point. I ran the American branch of one of the largest foundations in the world. And then I decided that I needed to think carefully about more about the field. And so when I decided to leave Atlantic Philanthropies, in 2003, I went back to Duke full-time and began writing. And this book is the third in a series of books that I've dealt with, each of which focuses on a different aspect of philanthropy.
So the aspect that you're looking for here is what? Of putting that wealth to work.
Correct. Well, it's important to keep in mind the context, because for most of the 20th century, in fact, for all of the 20th century, down to the last decade, most people with significant amounts of wealth chose to create foundations which were presumably perpetual. The idea, and we know the names of many of those foundations. The oldest are the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Corporation and the Ford Foundation, and they are playing extraordinarily important roles. They have been over the past 100 years in the American nonprofit sector. Starting in about 1990 or so, people began to talk about giving the money away during their lifetimes rather than creating a perpetual foundation and letting it be around for presumably forever. And I decided that it was important to try to probe that change in the landscape and to figure out why it happened, what might be the consequences of it, and that's the reason I wrote the book.
So let's talk about that, because you say that these trends coming together will most likely, probably, transform the not-for-profit sector, certainly in scale, as well as dynamism, and there's going to be scrutiny along the way as well.
That is absolutely correct. You know, if you look at what the perpetual foundations have been doing compared to what the spend-down foundations are doing, you know, it seems fairly clear that the perpetual foundations have really been sort of the social bankers for the American nonprofit sector. Many of the largest nonprofit organizations, like, for example, the National Environmental Protection Fund, Natural Resources Defense Committee, many of the human rights organizations, Human Rights First, countless organizations were all started by the perpetual foundations. They're there. They're a pool of money that are there to try to help sustain, improve the nonprofit sector. And if you look at the large number of nonprofit organizations that were started by them, you have to wonder, where is the money going to come from if there aren't any perpetual foundations, or if the perpetual foundations we're not creating them anymore, but donors are instead giving the money away during their lifetimes. So that's really what worried me, and that's what I still worry about, because when I look at what the perpetual foundations have done and compared to what the spend-down foundations or the giving while living foundations that people are doing, it's not the same thing. They don't seem to be interested in that kind of thing.
So that interest is in what they're doing during their lifetime. Also, they obviously have more control, and that can be good and bad, I assume. It's good for the person who's doing the giving, but perhaps of the organization that they'd be giving it to may not have as much freedom as they otherwise would.
That's true. You're absolutely correct about that. But I have to say, I'm not critical of the people who choose to spend down. I believe that donors should do what they want to do, and if they want to give away their money, many people who families have accumulated wealth get tired of doing it. If the money is not a lot and they feel they can't make a significant difference with it, the natural tendency is to say, well, let's just give it away now and not burden our successors or us with how to give it over a longer period of time. And that's fine as far as I'm concerned. I just think the way that this has become a default for those people who are wanting to give away money worries me, because it would be nice to have a balance. When you read the title of the book, you left out the question mark at the end, because it is a question mark.
Right.
It is, should you give it away now, or should you give it, worry about the future? And the famous Nobel Prize winner James Tobin, a professor of economics at Yale, said, the perpetual foundations are really important in terms of intergenerational benefiting. We don't always have these foundations, and who knows what's going to happen? If people stop creating perpetual foundations. So, my sense is there is a place for giving now. The needs are great. My concern is that if people decide that if what guides they're giving is the need to get rid of a lot of money during their lifetimes or shortly thereafter, they're not going to be as careful about giving it away and worrying about what kind of impact they achieve as they would be if they were worried about how to make significant difference in things that they cared about. So, and you just think about it this way: when you've got a deadline for giving away the money, then the maximum, the object that will guide you in giving it away is getting the money out the door, not how much impact you can achieve with it. And I see it myself in the ways in which people are giving away money. The foundation that I worked with for a number of years, for 10 years. Is one of those foundations that is spending down, and they've done wonderful things in the spend down, but the rationale for the spend down is let's give away a lot of money in the short run and solve a major problem. The problem is that the major problems are not capable of being solved in a short period of time. Global warming, poverty, all of those issues, they require repetitive efforts trying to figure out how to solve them. You don't do it in an instant. And so the problem is when what's guiding you is getting rid of the money, you're not paying attention to that kind of question, and you're not going to do the kind of due diligence and have patience in order to put the money to greatest maximum use. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. I thought something interesting in reading the book was this idea of this being uniquely American. You cite a figure that of the 138 signers of the Giving While Living pledge, 110 were American, but you also note that the world is following in those footsteps.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, when they first started the Giving Pledge, it was totally American, and gradually it's caught on. And as you know, that quote that I used and quoted in the book from the head of the Foundation Center,
right,
it's become a kind of a club, and the billionaires in other countries like the idea of associating with and getting to know the American billionaires. And so it is a kind of club. But it is becoming global. But the nice thing about it is that it has in fact led a number of people for other countries who had never been known for their charity to start giving it away. Carlos Slim is a good example, the Mexican billionaire, who when asked something like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, was asked about what he was doing in charity. He said, I don't believe in charity. I believe in my major contribution to society is creating jobs. 5 years later, he decided to join the Giving Pledge and started giving money away, and he's a major giver at this point. I think that's going to benefit the nonprofit sector in Mexico as well as elsewhere, and I think the same thing is true. There are givers in Scotland giving away billions of dollars, a few of them. There are now billionaires in China giving away money, in India giving away money. They were never doing it before. When Bill Gates took a group to, I think it was to China, it could have been to India, about 3 or 4 years ago, he couldn't assemble a group that was really supportive at all. And now you're beginning to see these people coming out of the woodwork and beginning to give away a lot of money. The notion of giving away money to help society grow is a compliment to the social philosophies in the governments of Western Europe, for example, where they believe that the state should do these things. The American experiment suggests that solving public problems is something that the state, the government should do, but that the private sector should do too. And that's the story of the nonprofit sector in the U.S. It was started before we had a state, before there was a government in Massachusetts.
With your many years of experience, do you see the giving becoming more political, or has it always been inherently political?
It has not historically been political. I think that it is. What you're seeing now is, again, number of wealthy individuals who have strong policy views on things, right or left. The ones that I know have observed more carefully are the ones on the left and the center, people who care about, for example, the environment. Tom Steyer, who was in the newspaper again today dealing with his concerns about the environment, he decided some years ago that he giving away a lot of money for for conservation, preserving the environment, and protecting against pollution, and he decided to he became a major donor politically in the last campaign. Julian Robertson, famous hedge fund creator and billionaire, passionate about the environment, gave a lot of money and is still giving a lot of money to the Environmental Defense Fund and the Natural Resources Defense Committee. He decided some years ago that he was going to pay that foundations cannot lobby. They're under law. They're not permitted to lobby. They're tax benefited organizations that Congress has chosen not to allow to lobby. So if Julian Robertson cares a lot about the environment and is putting a lot of hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, into environmental protection organizations that are nonprofits, he felt that he could get even more a bang for his buck if he also did work, if the people running his foundation could in fact lobby. So what he did was essentially he pays the foundation president out of his own after-tax dollars. It doesn't come from the tax-benefited dollars of the foundation that he established. And so the president of the foundation then is permitted to lobby. So we're seeing a number of examples of wealthy persons. It has to be done by somebody alive, a donor that is alive, because if a person's already given some money into a foundation and the foundation can't lobby, they can't do that. But if the donor is still alive and the donor has wealth, which they almost always do, then they give money to their foundation, which does things that are tax exempt, and they give money to pay hire lobbyists to work on the political side of things. So you're seeing a number of wealthy individuals combining their efforts, both through politics and also through through tax exempt organizations, charities.
As you say, this is the third book that you have written on the subject of philanthropy. Ultimately, in this last chapter, what would you like people to take away from the book?
I think that anybody who thinks seriously and carefully about achieving impact and cares about impact in the things that they worry about, whether it's the environment or whether it's poverty or whether it's peace, world peace, or what, I think that it is really important for people to think hard about how they're spending their money. And what I suggest in the last sort of epilogue of the book is that you really, if you care deeply about a major problem that is complex, that cannot, in my view, and in most people's view, be solved in a short period of time, the more effective use of your dollars in terms of achieving the objectives that you care about, that is protecting the environment or reducing poverty or reducing the consequences of poverty, if you care about those things, you ought to think about putting some of your money into political action that is not tax-benefited, where you can, in fact, help elect people who are going to do something about those problems, because ultimately, the biggest problems facing society cannot be solved by private money. They require the efforts of government. And the only way you're going to change the efforts of government is to put some of that money into work politically.
The name of the book is Putting Wealth to Work, Philanthropy for Today or Investing for Tomorrow? Question mark. The book is published by Public Affairs. Joe Fleischman, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Donahue. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Putting Wealth to Work, published by Public Affairs by Joel Fleischman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.